This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. When e-cigarettes were first introduced, they were promoted as a healthier and safer alternative to tobacco cigarettes and as a method to stop smoking altogether. There's been an increase in the number of teenagers who vape in places where smoking is forbidden, in the classroom, the school bathroom, the hallways, on the bus. A new device called Juul that looks like a flash drive lets them sneak a hit without getting caught. Here's a clip from a tobacco-free California video. These are teenagers talking about their experiences with vaping.
I was 13 years old when I vaped for the first time. I started buying $5 vaporizers, and from there, you know, I moved on to bigger ones.
Most of my friends that vape, they use nicotine. A lot of nicotine, actually. Like, because you can put as much nicotine into it as you want. Like, the concentrates can go way past just cigarettes.
There are too many flavors to count. There are endless amounts that you can get.
There's cotton candy, bubblegum, peppermint.
Some that taste like pancakes, coffee flavor.
I heard one was unicorn puke. It sounds like cartoon flavors or something.
It makes them seem a little bit more kid-friendly, so people are like okay with doing it.
Well, it turns out e-cigarettes can be hazardous to your health, especially to a developing teenage brain. The Juul is a high nicotine device, and as we heard in that clip, the multiple flavors appeal, I should say, to young people. Well, we have two guests who have joined us. Joseph Capella, he's the Gerald R. Miller Professor of Communication at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania, and he has studied advertising and its effect on health and tobacco products. Joseph Capella, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. And joining us from Yale University is Suchitra Krishnan Saran. She's a professor of psychiatry at the Yale University School of Medicine, where she researches adult and adolescent substance use behavior. She has contributed to the Surgeon General's report on preventing tobacco use among young people. Suchitra Krishnan Saran, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. We will get her hooked up. In the meantime, phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joseph Capella, let me begin with you. You have been a guest on Radio Times talking about vaping. I feel like this is a kind of a do-over, but things have changed. And I remember interviewing you a couple of years ago talking about advertising. We were all over YouTube yesterday looking for advertising that we might see on television, for instance, or even in magazines about vaping and even teenagers and vaping, and we couldn't find anything. What has happened?
So obviously what's happened is that the advertising world has changed from the old model of providing messaging and commercials that are purchased to go on mainstream media, and the use of social media and the use of existing websites as a place for people to come and tell their stories is part of the influence mechanism that is being activated and used extensively by commercial vendors. And from the point of view of ordinary persuasion and credibility, the thing that we know about those processes is that when people who are like us tell us what their experiences are, the likelihood of there being influence from those sources is better than it might be from more institutional and more distant and more commercially driven sources of information.
But it seems like advertisers, these companies have figured out where their clientele are.
They have. They're putting their information at the place where people are going to get that information on a regular basis, and they are taking advantage of the relatively inexpensive mechanisms that are available to them to provide that information to the people in their targeted audiences.
I want to pick up on that, but let me get Sutra officially welcome to Radio Times. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me begin by asking you, just helping our listeners understand, what is an e-cigarette, and what is the ingredients in an e-cigarette?
Sure. So e-cigarettes are a very simple device, technically. They are a device which contains an electrical element, and it contains an e-liquid. The electrical element is heated by a battery, and it vaporizes the e-liquid, and the vapor is then inhaled by people who are vaping or using it for other purposes. The constituents of an e-cigarette, we are just trying to get a handle on this because I would like to add that there are so many different e-cigarettes on the market now. This is a market which has been evolving a lot over the past few years. But the basic constituents usually are compounds like propylene glycol and glycerine and a lot of flavoring chemicals, which are usually aldehydes, and they are used to flavor, create all the 7,000 different flavors that the product is available in, and, of course, nicotine.
And, of course, nicotine. I mean, as I mentioned, we were still getting hooked up with you with Joseph Capella, that I remember when e-cigarettes first came on the market and they were being sold or promoted as something that was a safer alternative to cigarettes. Sushitra, can we say that's true?
Excellent question. And I think I'm going to have to say that the data on this is still emerging. This public health debate is really about, are they a good product that could be used by smokers to quit smoking? That is a question I think it'll take us a while to answer. I will say this, though, which is when you compare them to cigarettes, they probably do contain less harmful chemicals than a cigarette. But I think what we are concerned about in this public health debate is this extensive exponential rise in the use of these products amongst youth.
Sure.
In some cases, these are youth who are not smokers and who have never used tobacco or nicotine products before. So that's where the concern is rising.
And why? Go ahead, Joseph.
So I very much agree with the previous comments. But one of the things that's been interesting is that the National Academy of Sciences has had made some strong claims about exactly what Sushitra was telling us, namely that the jury is still out about whether this is a quit smoking product that's going to be useful for adults. Some studies say it does, and some that it does not. And they're advocating strongly for better research in that domain. The place where they were pretty clear was that kids who are users of e-cigarettes are more likely later to be users of regular tobacco, combustible cigarettes. And they were very strong about that claim. And the evidence here is of various types, but I have great confidence in the National Academy of Sciences. They do a very good job of evaluating the evidence. And they specifically evaluated this evidence as strong, whereas the other evidence about this is a quit smoking product as really in process.
Can we say, Sushitra, that smoking of quote-unquote regular cigarettes is down, even among teenagers, while e-cigarettes are up?
Yes, we can. But let me also make an additional point to clarify that issue. Smoking in teenagers has been coming down over many years because of the many public health regulations and which have been put into place to bring these levels down, including the smoke-free policies, all the regulations that specifically apply to youth. I do not believe that the decrease in cigarettes is in any way related to the increase in the use of e-cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that has been happening over a period of many years, and I do not think we can attribute it to e-cigarettes.
Why do you think, though, teenagers seem to be taking to e-cigarettes?
Teenagers take to e-cigarettes because they love the flavors that they come in. And they also love how innovative these devices are. When these devices first came out, they were very much like a regular cigarette, and they were also called they were called cigar-like devices. Now, these first-generation products looked very much like a regular cigarette. They were not that attractive. They did not really make youth want to use them. And, in fact, that's what our current evidence shows, that most youth do not like to use these original devices, which look like a cigarette. But they evolved over a period of time into these devices which have a lot more innovative aspects in it. You can change the temperature. You can create vape clouds. You can use different flavors. Now they are available in device forms like the Juul, which are very, very discreet and very easy to hide in your backpack or in your pocket. So teenagers use these products, I think, because of all these reasons. They are highly innovative, and they come in so many different flavors that makes them very appealing.
And this shows my ignorance, but how do you vape in a classroom and not get caught?
This is a very good question, Marty. You know, from everything that we've heard, and this is, of course, hearsay because we have not observed any of these teens in their class, we have heard that they clip it on to their jackets, their collars, and are able to take a quick vape during class. The reason some of these products like the Juul are work for these kinds of purposes is because they do not produce much vapor or right. vape clouds.
Right.
The ratio of the propylene glycol to the glycerine is such that you do not get much vape cloud, so nobody knows that mm-hmm. you're using this product. I was just at a school last week where they were telling me about all the devices they confiscated from students, and a significant proportion of those were Juul devices, although mm-hmm. there was a good smattering of other kinds of devices in there as well.
Joseph, we heard in that clip or that video or a clip of the video that we played that we have young people starting at the age of 13. Now, you're not allowed to buy this stuff until you're 18 or older. So right. what does that tell us?
It tells us that people are cheating, either by purchasing online successfully and getting through that process and getting the items mailed to them in their houses, and in some data, observational data on retailers, something like 95% of retailers were not checking the kids who were purchasing these devices and other sorts of tobacco products from them. So I think it's pretty clear that that's what's happening, and the FDA has recognized that, and one of the things that they're going to try to clamp down on through some kinds of observational work themselves and letters to retailers is exactly on this issue. Mm. That is, let's have these devices sold only to those for whom they are eligible. I did want to say one quick thing about what kids understand about e-cigarettes. One of the things they do understand about e-cigarettes is that again, correctly or incorrectly from their point of view, is that they are safer. These are not tobacco cigarettes, and they understand that fully. One of the things that they don't seem to understand based on the data that I have seen is that these delivery systems are, for the most part, the vast, vast majority of them are delivering nicotine. Something like only 25% realize that these are nicotine delivery systems, and that's really problematic. Now, people's understanding of nicotine and whether it's dangerous and not is another issue, but they don't understand what's in them and what kinds of consequences that can have for their brains and so on.
You know, I want to play two clips, and we were online yesterday finding all sorts of YouTube videos of young people, frankly teenagers, basically promoting one of their e-cigarettes or even a flavor that they liked. This is two teenagers. They are on YouTube, and they are reviewing Juul's Mango Pods.
Mango, yo. So fire. So fire.
So sweet.
All right, so if I could describe this flavor, it would be really sweet, but it's not that, like, really, really sweet. It's just, like, it's, like, the perfect amount of sweetness. Like, it's not over the top, but it's not, like, you can't taste it. Like, you can obviously taste it. It is so good. Like,
you get good ass hits off of it. Like that?
Man, that's fire.
Let me play another clip from this tobacco-free California, picking up on this. Again, these are California teens talking about their experiences with vaping.
Some of my friends, they're sponsored by vape companies. They just get sent stuff for free because then they, like, make YouTube videos of all the tricks that they're doing, and they're like, oh, this is the juice I'm using, this is the mod I'm using.
A lot of people post them on their Snapchat stories or on Instagram of them vaping. They tend to be more popular.
You know, I can look up vape and a whole bunch of videos will come up, and I can see what kind of cool tricks they're doing, learn what the name is, and I can go look it up on YouTube about how to do it.
It's the whole culture. It's kind of a big deal for a lot of people that I know.
Suchitra, how do you do a workaround? How do you speak to these young people when they're talking to each other?
So this is a very important question because, you know, social media has played a huge role in making these devices popular. And I think we need to directly address them and speak to some of the issues that Joe Capella raised earlier around the nicotine issue. Most people do not know, and most teenagers do not know, that nicotine is actually is toxic to the teenage brain. The teenage brain is highly sensitive to the effects of nicotine. And while for ethical reasons we have not been able to conduct these evaluations or these research projects in humans, I mean, you obviously could not bring a human adolescent who's naive and give them nicotine. That would be ethically inappropriate. A lot of work has been done in animals that has shown very clearly that, you know, when a teenage brain or an adolescent brain is exposed to nicotine, it has a lot of consequences, such as it makes the youth highly sensitive to use of other products like cocaine, other drugs of abuse. It also impairs cognitive abilities. So I think if we make the kids understand and educate them on how nicotine is bad for them, that could be a first step in you know, getting them to not use these products.
Well, Joseph, I'm thinking as Suchitra is talking there about this is your brain on drugs. I mean, can you say this is your brain on vaping?
Maybe on nicotine.
Or on nicotine.
Because, you know, this is a delivery system, right? It is not necessarily a nicotine delivery system, although that's what it's overwhelmingly used for. And so in the same way that we have had a great deal of long-term effect on kids in their attitudes towards smoking combustible tobaccos, there's no reason why the current campaign that is being put into place by the FDA that deals with e-cigarettes can't be effective as well. I think it can be, but there's a long row to hoe here, and the lack of information that folks have about nicotine and what nicotine actually is, because people sometimes actually confuse the idea that nicotine is somehow a cancer delivery vehicle, and it's not. But it is a vehicle that delivers addiction and deleterious consequences on the brain, as Suchitra is just telling us about. And so it seems to me that that kind of campaign is certainly one that we can expect to be effective, but not tomorrow.
Well, we're almost up on a break here, but do you have to get two teenagers who sound like those young girls, those teenage girls, talking about their mango pods to offer this alternative point of view?
I think at least we need to do that.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about the fact that vaping is becoming increasingly popular among teenagers. Our guests are Joseph Capella. He's the Gerald R. Miller Professor of Communication at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. He's been studying advertising, its effect on health. It's also how it is used in tobacco products. Suchitra Krishnan-Saran is a professor of psychiatry at Yale University School of Medicine. She researches adult and adolescent substance use behavior. She's also contributed to the Surgeon General's report on preventing tobacco use among young people. We want to hear from you, especially if there's a young person in your life. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499, radiotimes@whyy.org. This is Radio, this is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing. We're talking about teenagers and vaping e-cigarettes. Apparently, it has grown increasingly popular among teenagers. In fact, so prevalent that among teens that the FDA has begun cracking down on e-cigarette sales to minors, or at least trying to do that. We've been talking about a brand called Juul, but there are many brands that are trendy, looking rather cool, and vaping also seems to include lots of flavors, and including something like 7,000 flavors. And again, you can join us, especially if there's a young person in your life who you think might be vaping and you might not know it. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So, Chitra, what about these 7,000 flavors? And some of them are called Smurf and all the sort of youthful-sounding flavors. I can't imagine a 28-year-old is going to want a Smurf version of their e-cigarette. Is that the problem, or at least part of the problem?
The flavors do make the products extremely attractive. Now, in reference to your point about 28-year-olds, we actually find that even young adults who may be 28 years old use e-cigarettes quite a bit. So the it's not just the youth, but also young adult groups who are using this product. The flavors, as I said, are what draws people to the product. Who wouldn't if it had names like Dragon's Milk and you know, and
not sure about the
very,
vomit one, but yes,
very exotic flavors, right? Teenagers are curious, you know, when you present them with information like that, they want to know what's in it, and it really does play a huge role in drawing them to it. I would just like to add one more point about the Juul, just switching gears a little bit, if you don't mind.
Nice.
I want to point out one thing that makes the Juul different than other products on the market is it has a very high level of nicotine. And going right. back to the nicotine discussion we were having earlier, I think right. this is really something that teens need to be educated about. The Juul does not come without nicotine. So any teenager who thinks they are Juuling and a standard device and not using nicotine is mistaken. And there is a lot of concern that the high levels of nicotine in this product could have significant influences on the teenage brain, especially when, you know, they are vaping it constantly all through the day. Now, the Juul does not come in as many flavors as, you know, we've been discussing. You do not get it in 7,000 different flavors. But that is counteracted by the fact that it is so hot, it is so discreet, and which makes it so attractive to youth from an innovative perspective, and their rationale for using it is more the discreteness, I think, rather than flavors. So this really varies from product to product, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, this appeal of flavors. It depends on what kind of flavors each device comes in.
Can we say, Suchitra, that kids are doing this all day long then?
That's what a lot of kids tell us. So my work really focuses on understanding youth use behaviors. Most of the youth we speak to, many of them who say they use these products, say they are vaping them throughout the day. Now, again, like I said, this is hearsay. We have not gone into the classrooms to really observe them to see if this is what they are doing, but this is what they tell us.
A caller said, kids also don't understand that e-cigarettes are a fire hazard. Somebody at my daughter's school fell asleep vaping and their mattress caught fire. Yikes.
Right.
Let me get Ronnie from, looks like Berks County, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Ronnie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm asking the 800-pound gorilla in the room vis-a-vis my teenage granddaughter. She vapes to avoid getting fat, she says, instead of putting in unhealthy food. And she wishes there would be no nicotine. She doesn't even want any flavors. The problem is, of course, as we discussed, that probably you couldn't come back and buy more of those things that give it flavor. She'd be satisfied with some mild flavor, but she really just sticks it in her mouth to avoid getting fat. And we all know about teenage girls and their body images.
Well, that's really interesting, Ronnie. I appreciate the call to Radio Times as a kind of substitute for eating. Joseph, do you have any thoughts about that? And Suchitra, I want to get a response from you as well.
It's always a tough question because that belief, of course, has been around for a long time with combustible tobaccos. But the side effects, I mean, the other effects of combustible tobaccos are so problematic, and we have done such a good job of changing the conventions about the consuming of those that the positive consequences that people believe are associated with the consumption there of, you know, reduced appetite and so on got traded off. And so I think in some senses you need to begin that trade-off once again. Now, whether that works with a particular granddaughter or not is another matter.
Sure.
But when we're talking about trying to appeal to a broad base of the population, again, it's a trade-off of risks versus benefits, or at least perceived benefits.
Sure. Sue Chitra, what do you think?
So we have heard this too. In fact, if you go on a lot of the online vape forums, there is a lot of discussion of this issue. People use many of these flavored products to suppress their appetite, and I'm sure this is very attractive to teenagers too. I would tell her granddaughter this, which is that, especially if she's vaping all through the day, she's not putting just water vapor into her system. Especially if she's vaping flavors, there are a lot of chemical constituents in these flavors. And we do not know a lot about the harmful effects of these chemical constituents. And she needs to know that it is not an inert product. It's not just water vapor. So it's probably not a good idea to be vaping this product all through the day.
We have a question from Gail from Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Is popcorn lung a problem for teens, too? Sue Chitra, can you take that?
Sure. So this is a concern, yes, but let me clarify a few things on this. So this issue of popcorn lung actually comes from there's literature which showed that individuals who were working in popcorn factories who were exposed to these butter flavorings developed a condition called bronchiolitis obliterans, which is basically a lung inflammatory condition. And they found that it was related to a compound called diacetyl, which was in the butter flavoring. Now, the reason this raised a lot of concerns in the e-cigarette field is because they observed that many of these flavors used in e-cigarettes also contain this diacetyl compound. From what I understand, most e-cigarette companies are now staying away from diacetyl and are not including it as one of the flavorants in their products. However, I was recently talking to an e-cigarette, an e-liquid manufacturer, who told me that diacetyl can also be a byproduct of some of the other chemicals that are put in as flavor chemicals into these e-liquids. So while it is not directly added in, it may still be a product of the heating and the vaporization. So I think we still need to remain concerned about this, even though it may not be as present in as high levels as if it was directly introduced into the e-liquids.
Just let me go back to you and talk a bit about advertising, or I guess counter-advertising, when it comes to trying to get people to give up, whether e-cigarettes or even cigarettes. And the kind of visual triggers, and you're talking to someone who used to smoke, so I understand those visual triggers and how that can create a kind of weird appetite for something that you know is so bad for you. Mm-hmm. How should we understand that?
So we actually studied this with regard to combustible cigarettes a bunch of years ago, and did find some evidence that when anti-smoking ads had some of these visual cues, people smoking or the paraphernalia or artifacts of smoking, that undermined the effectiveness of the anti-smoking advertising. So whenever we've been called upon to give advice to folks, the first thing we who are preparing some of these materials, we tell them just don't have any. Try to reduce those triggers in the advertising. That doesn't make the advertising effective, but it helps make it less likely to be ineffective.
Wow!
So that's really pretty much all that did. But obviously, there are many other triggers. There are social situations, for example, in which people are used to, or at least had been used to having cigarettes, so whether they were at parties or whatever the case may be. Maybe even now. Commiserating and chatting with their friends outside the doorways of buildings. And so those social triggers are a little bit different and much more subtle, and they can be triggers without having the visuals of cigarettes or cigarette paraphernalia.
Let me get back to some calls. We've got a lot of people with calls either on our through our email or through Twitter. A question from a caller: are teens also vaping marijuana? Suchitra, can you take that?
Sure. Yes, unfortunately so. Joe Capella earlier made a very good point, which is that we have to remember these are delivery devices. It has an electrical element. It heats whatever e-liquid or substance you put in it, and you can inhale the vapor. So what we are finding is, yes, teens are actually inserting hash oil or marijuana leaves into this product and are vaporizing them and inhaling marijuana from this also. And the similar concerns that we discussed earlier with nicotine apply to use of marijuana through these devices, which is that it does not smell as combusted marijuana mm-hmm. does, so it's a very discreet way of using marijuana.
Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Pete. He says, my son was suspended from Haverford High School after being caught with a friend vaping. I was in full support of this. An email from Deb. I have concerns regarding my 14-year-old, a straight-A student and a varsity athlete. During one of our car talks, he was very confident that vaping is safe because one of his smart friends, whom he trusts, said that it was. P.S. My kids say kids as young as 12 years old are vaping on bus rides, and you just grimaced at me, Joseph Capella. But we're talking about teenagers. Teenagers have this sense of invincibility, and yes, you know, the future is so far away, they don't think in those terms.
So, I mean, obviously we're never going to keep teenagers and adolescents from doing risky things. They will find some way to carry out risky behaviors just because that's what they need to do, because they have to try out some lifestyles and so on. And I think the best we can do is sometimes, in this case, fighting a rearguard action, which is to say, okay, somebody in the commercial domain has come up with a product that is attractive and actually outweighs some of the obvious risks that have been associated with combustible tobaccos and still allows some kind of risky, arousing sorts of undertakings by teenagers. And now we've got to engage in a corrective action. And in the meantime, there are going to be problems. There are going to be individuals who are harmed while we're gathering evidence and while we're carrying out this this action to campaign to reinstate a reasonable risk and benefit ratio on this this particular product. In the meantime, I have to say it's always the case that the commercial world is out there changing under us so quickly that we have a very difficult time keeping up with them.
Let me read something. This comes from Jewel, one of the devices we have been talking about. Sue Chitrila, I'm going to put this to you. This is from the Associated Press. Just a couple of days ago, the maker of the much-debated e-cigarette popular with teenagers said it will spend $30 million in an effort to keep its products out of the hands of children. Mm-hmm. That is good, but how should that money be spent? What is the effective way of spending that kind of money?
Well, I think that's what we are all trying to figure out. I don't have the answer for you here. They are, I will say this about Juul, which is that their online sales, when you go to purchase a Juul product online, they do require you to provide an ID before you can, purchase it online. But we are also learning that that is not the only way that many youth are getting these products. They're getting it from their friends. They get older siblings to purchase it for them. I think Juul should really try to restrict the sales of their products in some way. I don't have the answer. Perhaps Joe would be a better person to answer this.
Well, I know the FDA has some undercover teams that have done some work. I mean, you can't go undercover at every store in America. Right. But what do you think?
So, well, I wouldn't necessarily spend my money in that way. What I think would be a very strong gesture by Juul is not simply saying this is a product for adults, but actually engaging in an advertising campaign directed at teenagers that aims at prevention. So that's very much against their self-interest. And so if you're going to spend $30 million in a way that is against your own self-interest, which is the interest would be cultivating, a clientele, if you do that, there's that's an ethical and moral stance that is difficult to ignore. So it's one thing to say, buy our product and it'll help you quit smoking, even though that may not be true. And that's still self-interested. So I would say if you can say that you're spending your money in a different way that is aimed at prevention, then I'm more on your side.
So, Chitra, there's a lot of money to be made in from e-cigarettes, right?
Yes, there is. And I would really say that, you know, if Juul is serious about their prevention campaigns, I think they should incorporate this issue of nicotine and its effects on the teenage brain also in their campaign, because I think we know a lot about that. And they need to make students understand that their products contain high levels of nicotine and it can have deleterious effects on their brain. And I think that would be a good faith effort right there.
We're almost out of time here. A question from Jill from Westchester. Is there a risk of secondhand smoke? Suchitra, is there?
Nobody knows.
Joseph just whispered, nobody knows.
No, this is all the, you know, as we both said earlier, this market is evolving so fast and so rapidly that even if you get information about one product and what its secondhand effects might be, now you have another product available to you and you have to repeat all the same studies to see if it's having any secondhand effects. So we don't really know. We do not have a good handle on this.
Can we say, though, don't vape?
Yes, please, absolutely. Well,
let's be careful because we want to make sure that if vaping helps people stay away from combustible tobaccos because they are already smokers, that is in their best interests.
I agree. So I correct my statement. Yep. Youth should not vape.
There you go.
If there are smokers who want to use it for quitting, that is a separate issue.
Suchitra Krishnan Saran, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Joseph Capella, thank you for joining us as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and John Ahrens, with assistance from Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.